Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And here come the pretzels.
Welcome back in. It is indeed 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. My name is Kevin Zipak. I'm here with Herb Lawrence until 4 o'clock this evening, taking you up to David Schuster. And then he will in turn take you up to Bulls basketball. And then we're going to have our own Selection Sunday program on the station tonight with The Score's very own college basketball savant, Eli Hershkovich. And Eli is in studio with us now because apparently he lives here now. He's not allowed to go to his actual home. He lives here. What's that? Okay. Well, you're more pleasant than Shane, at least. So, yeah, so that's at least one step ahead. But you are our college basketball expert. You're growing just in front of our eyes, and you're here now to help us. It is Selection Sunday. I told Herb last year I somehow miraculously won my bracket challenge thing, but this year I've been way out of the loop, so I'm going to ask you very, very remedial-level questions here. For instance, who do you believe, and then there's still a little bit of games here to go today, but where you are right now, who are going to be the 4-1 seeds?
Duke is number one. There's no question about that. Zion Williamson carried Duke to the ACC Tournament Championship. If you guys watched it over the weekend, that UNC game was fantastic on Friday.
Yeah, he played all right, huh?
Played all right. Yeah. Played okay. Not the best games. No, I'm just kidding. Zion controlled that game. If Duke lost to UNC twice this year in the regular season, Zion having the injury in the first game at home and then UNC dominating the second half, and both games were because Zion was out. Yes, Duke has issues in the interior inside defensively, but Zion changes everything for them in transition on both ends of the floor. So Duke, the number one overall seed for me there, Virginia, even though they've lost twice to Duke this season, and they lost in the first round of their first matchup in the ACC tournament.
Yeah, that was humiliating.
Yeah, rough, unbelievable game just because Florida State, I mean, that's the kind of team that could take out of Virginia in the NCAA tournament, a team that could rebound the ball, push the pace. But regardless, Tony Bennett's team, one of the best offensive teams Tony Bennett's ever had. I think they have the highest adjusted offensive efficiency that under Tony Bennett, the highest Virginia has ever been when Bennett's been the head coach there. So Virginia, for me, the second overall number one seed. And then it becomes interesting because Tennessee just got smacked or is in the process of getting smacked against Auburn.
I thought they just went final.
So Auburn wins that one.
By 20.
Bruce Pearl getting some revenge. How about that?
Your guy.
My guy. Gotta love Bruce Pearl, a fellow member of the tribe. But over to the other two number one seeds. If you look at Gonzaga and UNC, Gonzaga is an interesting case as well because they lost in the West Coast tournament title earlier this week to St. Mary's. And similar to Virginia, a team that can give Gonzaga issues is you can rebound the basketball, match up size-wise, and slow down the tempo. Because with Perkins and Norvell, you want to push the pace if you're the Bulldogs. Again, regardless, Gonzaga is likely going to be at least the third overall number one seed, if not the fourth, if they do fall back because of the two teams I'm about to mention. UNC right now, before the Big Ten title game starts, is my fourth overall number one seed. Kobe White's been phenomenal for UNC, the freshman point guard. Have a heck of a front court, too, in Cam Johnson and Luke May. Again, destroying Duke in both of their matchups this year. They push the pace. They can rebound the ball. And you need good guard play to win in the tournament. And Kobe White provides you just that, even though he has some turnover issues. But if Michigan State beats UNC today, to me, it's Michigan State. One of the better defensive teams in the country. Top 10 in adjusted defensive efficiency. Cassius Winston, a hell of a point guard. One of the better front courts, too, is Xavier Tillman and Nick Ward. And, of course, you have the zone factor. If Michigan State beats Michigan today in the Big Ten Tournament Final, Michigan State gets that fourth overall number one seed.
All right, take me into the room where the people are deciding who's going to make the tournament. We turn on the TV. It's 6 o'clock, whatever time the brackets come out. Give me the case for Indiana. Give me the case against Indiana.
You look at Indiana's record this season, especially in Big Ten play, 8 wins. So you could say you can go 8-10 in conference play and be okay. But the way they played, here's the reason why Indiana won't make the NCAA tournament. The way they played against Ohio State, yes, Ohio State gets their best player back, so you could say Indiana was at a disadvantage. But regardless, you lost to Ohio State at home. So that's a revenge game for you from the betting perspective, the way I look at a lot of these college basketball games, betting on them every day. And Romeo Langford was absolute trash in that game. One of the better scorers, one of the better freshmen in college basketball, not just in the Big Ten. And they laid a dud. They came back from 20 down in the final 5 minutes. But for the Hoosiers to have had a shot, you had to win that game. That was a must win for Archie Miller and co. They lost it. The reason why the committee says Indiana is that last one of the last four teams into the NCAA tournament is those 2 wins over Michigan State, among other things. But that's the big key there. You beat Michigan State twice. Number one, when the season was on the line after losing 7 in a row in Big Ten play. And then they beat them at home, which you thought was going to be win and in until they lose to Ohio State in the first round. They went into the Big Ten tournament with 5 straight wins. So you're thinking the Hoosiers are going to be red hot, maybe make a run of the Big Ten tournament, and they slowed down in that one and cost themselves an NCAA tournament bid.
You know, just sticking on Indiana here for a couple seconds longer, you know, they've had a hard time getting back up to, you know, the level of where they were traditionally, you know, in the glory days of Indiana basketball. Do you think Archie Miller is the right guy to get them back to that level? Because he's had a couple years now here. They've recruited a lot better, certainly under Archie Miller, but they're, you know, like we're talking about them right here, like they're a bubble team. They might not get in here. Is he the right guy to kind of steady that ship going forward, do you think?
I like Archie Miller as a coach, what he did at Dayton, consistently getting the Flyers into the NCAA tournament as a mid-major program, or A-10, not so much a mid-major, but not a high-major program by any means. But for the Hoosiers, this was a big year because you get that 5-star in Romeo Langford in-state. You're trying to change the course of your program after what Tom Crean did, and I'm not against Tom Crean as a coach because that was a pace that worked for Indiana for 4 or 5 years in a row, a high-tempo pace, push the floor, and control the tempo. But Archie Miller is trying to change that with defense, and they lost a lot defensively. They struggled in that area, too. And Juwan Morgan is an interesting case. See, the big thing here is Archie Miller didn't have a lot of his own recruits. He's only been there. This is his second year. So you can only evaluate it from the two-year process. And but you get your 5-star recruit and you can't win. I'm not saying he's not done at Indiana, but you're starting to get closer to the hot seat if they don't make the tournament next year.
Here we go, Eli. I'm going to ask you a question of a team that I actually like. The coach in particular, I think we agree on. The Iowa team is the team that beat
Trash.
Illinois is the real team, or the team that showed up versus Michigan the real team?
The one that showed up against Michigan, 100%. Fran McCaffrey.
And why do you hate Fran McCaffrey so
yes.
much?
Don't insult a man named Francis John McCaffrey here on St. Patrick's Day.
I'll
please,
do it.
I implore you.
I'll do it proudly. One of the worst coaches in college basketball.
Wow.
I'm not afraid to go on a limb and say that. I hate Ooh. Iowa just from the – I used to watch a lot of Big Ten ball, not a big Iowa fan.
Sure.
But when you're gambling on a lot of these games, you got to put your fandom aside. The reason why Iowa struggles so much is because of their interior defense. I brought that up with Duke, how even with and without Zion, their interior defense has struggled. Iowa has one of the worst interior defenses, in fact, the worst, in Big Ten play. So Tyler Cook and Luka Garza can do all they want offensively, but that team struggles. They give up a ton of points. So much luck involved in Iowa's success this year. You go on the road, you win at Rutgers on a banked-in three from the corner. Not even from the top of the key, but from the corner, Iowa wins that game. A 15-point comeback with under 3 minutes to go against Northwestern. Sure, you could say, Anthony, here and I were talking about this earlier in the day, that, well, good teams come back, and that sort of success can spurt your NCAA tournament hopes because you play well down the stretch in games. But it's also flat-out luck. The luck guys, I like to call them. You win.
I see what you did there.
You win at home against Indiana. When they were down by 3 and they got some good breaks in the latter part of that game, I was going to get upset in the first round of the tournament.
Wow.
Mark my words on that.
I mean, it's a 8-9, 7-10. I don't know. Upset is it's a little.
They're
going
to lose though.
Let's go to Ames. That is my team, Iowa State. That's the team that I could see
that's
having
your team?
Yes.
Okay.
That can have a nice run. Well, because they have one of the players, Illinois prep, Talen Horton Tucker.
Ah, there it is.
I mean, the beef between him and Io and the family and the AAU circuits is dumb because Talen Horton Tucker, from all reports, wanted to be an Illini. And, you know, dumb stuff happens, and now the Illini are sitting at the crib while Iowa State is thriving. Give me the case for Iowa State going to at least a Sweet 16.
Well, you go back to the last couple of weeks, and I was a big Iowa State guy as well, going back to Fred Hoiberg and George Niang, and I don't think they ever made it past the Sweet 16 under Fred Hoiberg. Now with Steve Prohm, they regressed a ton defensively before the Big 12 tournament. You look at interior defense similar to Duke and similar to Iowa, they give up a ton of points inside. And when you're not making three-point shots and you can't control the tempo, teams are going to crush you in transition. That's what happened for the Cyclones. Now you look at the Big 12 tournament. They beat Kansas yesterday. They win the conference tournament title as the number five seed. They're probably going to get a number four seed in the NCAA tournament, four, maybe a five, but I would lean closer to the four. Talen Horton Tucker is a big reason why that team has been on the up and up in overall this season. I know they struggled down the stretch before the Big 12 tournament. One of the better freshman scorers in college basketball, along with Romeo Langford, can shoot the three, can stretch it. This team has an arsenal of three-point threats. One of the better three-point shooting teams in college basketball. Wigginton is an elite shooter, also elite off the dribble. And Jacobson, too. They're not just a team that could shoot it. Jacobson gives them a legit down-low presence that can also score from three, can stretch it. They run out a five-man lineup that can all handle the basketball and stretch the floor. I compare them to a little bit. They're not Loyola Chicago of last year by any means. But the reason why Loyola had success last year in the tournament was because you had five ball handlers on the floor at once. Even Cameron Cartwright can handle the ball. That's what you need to win in March, to create matchups on both ends of the floor. Iowa State can switch on the other side too, one through five. And similar to the NBA, you need that to have success in March. I think Iowa is at least going to make a Sweet 16 run as long as
Iowa State
is going to make a Sweet 16 run as long as their defense doesn't regress back to the way they were before the Big 12 tournament.
That is the voice of our SCORE college basketball expert, Eli Herskovich. My name is Kevin Zipak. I'm here with Herb Lawrence. We're going to be here until 4 o'clock, but right now we've got Eli because it is Selection Sunday. And he is a walking encyclopedia of collegiate basketball knowledge. How's your wrist, by the way? I know you got the carpal tunnel thing going on over there.
It's all right, man. It's been an interesting last couple weeks just in terms of writing, but it's been okay. I appreciate the concern.
I'm very concerned for you, yes. Do you want to stick around for another segment?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. That is, like I said, Eli Herskovich. He knows everything about college basketball. You're going to have to take my word for it, and you're going to want to listen if you want to stand a chance in your bracket challenge this year. 312-644-6767 is the phone number, 67011. If you've got a question that you would like me or Herb to relay to Eli, we're all in favor of that as well. I'm Kevin Zipek. That's Herb Lawrence. Eli's here for another segment, but Herb and I are here till 4 on 670 The Score.
Brown.
Welcome back in to 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. My name's Kevin Zipak. I'm here with Herb Lawrence. We're here together until 4 o'clock. And right now in the studio, we've got the Score's college basketball expert, Eli Herskovich. Eli, you'll be on tonight around 7:30, correct, for a little bracket program?
Correct. After Bulls Kings tonight, Jordan Stone and I breaking down the bracket. Do not fill out your bracket till you listen to that show.
That's good advice. Thank you very much. And thank you for dedicating some time out of your day with us here, because you're here to inform me personally and also the masses and everybody else that wants to.
I'm here to help you win again, Kevin.
I think just personally, I need to win again. I don't care about Herb or anybody else, quite frankly. I'd like to win again. I could use a few extra hundo in my pocket because, hell, I work here. Of course, I could use it. On the way in, you heard the Bradley Braves, and they won the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament, so they've punched their ticket, so to speak. But a little bit of a negative story there in, where is Bradley?
Peoria.
Peoria. A little bit of a bad look from Bradley. They were picking a fight with a local reporter. Can you elaborate on that a little bit for those out there that may not be familiar with this story?
Yeah, so the Peoria Journal-Star, which is essentially Peoria's Chicago Tribune, the local paper down there, Dave Reynolds, who's been covering that team for almost 30 years now, I guess wrote something negative in the past, not in the during the NCAA tournament run or the run to the NCAA tournament for Bradley, but in this season, and Bradley took offense to that. They started to revoke some of his access to media events, things like that. Not the Peoria Journal-Star overall. They continue to remind you, but just him himself. And it's a terrible look for a program that could have been on the similar path to Loyola, still can. I mean, we could all root against them, but that doesn't matter. If they make a run, they make a run. But it's a distraction. It's a distraction for a team and a coach in Brian Wardle, who has a lot to do with this because of his soft skin.
I mean, yeah, we had him on with Lawrence, I think it was on Monday, the day after they did punch their ticket to the tournament. And I did not get that feeling from him or the SID I worked with that they felt so negative and they wanted to have some retribution towards a journalist who's doing his job. I mean, like I'm saying, like if you go to Peoria and you're a local guy and you just started writing as Eli Herskovitz's first year, I could see them taking offense with your stance because you're a new guy. You don't know how Peoria and Bradley work. But this guy, Dave Reynolds, is a longtime veteran. Picking a fight with him, he's known. People know him. I remember when it came out yesterday, there couldn't be more backlash against Bradley from scribes, from
Dan Bernstein
guys
wrote
like,
about
yeah,
it.
Guys like me who didn't hear about Dave Reynolds until yesterday. Like, you don't treat media personalities like that in first place, and especially not a guy long in the game like Dave Reynolds. So I don't know who's doing PR or media down there. But one thing you don't do is attack the media. If they're doing something wrong and they're intentionally hurting you, yeah, call them out. But if they're just doing their job and they're not supposed to, what they said, improve the Bradley brand or have the Bradley brand out there, they're not. That's not their job. That's your job, AD. That's your job, SID. That's your job, Brian Wardle. So it was just a bad look for everybody. I think it soured everybody on Bradley going forward. They did issue an apology after, so that's good. They got in front of the story, but it shouldn't have got to this point already.
No, and I mean, public relations and journalism are not the same thing, and that's what a lot of people don't realize sometimes when you see reports coming out that are less favorable or that point that paint someone in a poor light. A lot of the times people will get upset about that. It, you know, it's just for honest reporting, and that's so hard to come by these days. But on the court, how big of a run can Bradley make? I mean, to call them this year's Loyola, I think, is ridiculous because, you know, what we saw from Loyola last year doesn't happen every single year. It's pretty rare. But they are in the same conference. They are, you know, I guess comparable talent level. Would you say that? I mean, how far could Bradley go in this tournament and wipe some of the stink off that they've had now from this whole fiasco?
Well, if you look at the last five, so now last six, if you're including Bradley, but the last five NCAA tournament participants from the Missouri Valley Conference have all won at least one game in the tournament. So the success is there from the conference from that standpoint. But the seeding is also different because Bradley's likely going to get a number 15 seed. We've seen them matched up in some bracketologist brackets in potentially playing to Tennessee. Kansas, if Kansas got that high, they're probably dropping down after they lost in the Big 12 tournament title game. Regardless, though, likely playing a 15 or a 2 seed as number 15 seed. I can't see Bradley getting out of that hole because you think about the teams, the upper echelon teams who are going to be a 15 or a 2 seed, a Michigan State if they lose today, a Kentucky, a North Carolina potentially if they don't jump on the one line. Bradley's not beating any of those teams. Darryl Brown's a really good guard. Elijah Childs can score from the block. The key for Bradley is similar to a key a team like Virginia, not like the extent of a Virginia in terms of slowing down the pace like the Hoos do, and trying to keep this a low possession game. But Bradley thrives off that as well, keeping it at a slower tempo and not pushing the floor, rebounding the ball, controlling the glass with their shot blockers. So I don't expect Bradley to make a run, even with that being said, because of the matchup, the likely matchup in the first round.
That is the voice of Eli Herskovitz. You can hear him and Jordan Stone, who I like to call Pip and Pebble, 7-10 right after the Bulls post game. You get it?
That's so horrible.
Okay. You can go with a different way. Maybe Barkley. Whatever. 7 to 10.
Do, man.
After for the selection show, Eli will be on until 10 o'clock. Don't fill your brackets out until then.
Don't do it.
So there's a texter from the 815 has multiple questions for Eli. They want to know where Marquette's going to get seated and their chances for the tournament, and also how many Big East teams will get in.
4 Big East teams. I'd say I think you're looking at Marquette, Villanova, who obviously won the Big East tournament title. They won the Big East regular season title as well. Seton Hall is in the mix there, too. They're going to be in. And then it's interesting who gets that last 4 spot in the conference, because Xavier likely earned it after they made it to the conference tournament semifinals. They lost to Villanova. They lost that big lead in the second half. I think they were up 7 with 3 minutes to go. And then, of course, Jay Wright pulls a Jay Wright. Villanova pulls a Villanova, and they win that game in overtime. Luckily, I covered. Thank you, Xavier, for that matter, on the plus 6. But Xavier would likely be that last last team in. I'm going to go 4 because I do think Xavier gets in, but it
no
might
love
be
for
3.
St. John's.
St. John's, it's on the borderline. They're on the last 4 in a lot of people's brackets. I don't think they have enough. The quad 1 and the quad 2 in respectively, it depends how much the NCAA selection committee values net. A lot of people have talked about net, which is replacing the RPI. Net takes into effect more of the metrics, like adjusted offensive and defensive efficiency. So how well you play on each end of the court in terms of holding down opponents to a low possession rate, to a low scoring rate on a possession-by-possession basis. From that matter of fact, I don't see St. John's getting in, but if the committee decides to use it the same way they did RPI, they're likely in 4 teams either way.
Let me talk about a guy that I love because he was a Illini coach, and they fired him after a poor season, 17-15. We would kill people, literally kill people, if we had a 17-15 record this year.
Hopefully not.
I would literally kill somebody. Please get a 17-15 record again. But he went 6 of the 9 years to the NCAA tournament with the Illini. Now he's going for the 5th time out of the 7 years he's been down in Kansas. Of course, we're talking about Bruce Weber. He won the Big 12 championship. He tied with Texas Tech for the regular season. That's the first time a non-Kansas team has won in 15 seasons. Where is Kansas State as far as the tournament? Where do you think their chances are? Last year, losing to Loyola, it was a big time. To get to the Final 4. So I'm trying to say, was it a mistake? Looking in hindsight, yes, it was. But was it a mistake for the Illini to fire Bruce Weber when they did?
Yes, because you think about, you go back to when Illinois made the national title game against North Carolina back in 2005. A lot of those recruits weren't Bruce Weber guys. I mean, none of them were, because Bill Self ran that program until he left for Kansas. So from Illinois' perspective, you think about what Bruce Weber did there after that season and not making – I don't think they made it past the Sweet 16 after that year.
No, they didn't.
Exactly. So from the perspective of you didn't grow a program and you didn't get them past – or you didn't even get them close to where you were under – who were under the players that were Bill Self's guys, that's a problem from Illinois' perspective. In hindsight, like you mentioned, looking back, you should have kept Bruce Weber, obviously. But I don't think if you look back at the way Illinois performed over that 4 or 5 year stretch, because Weber wasn't able to succeed with his own recruits, I'm not too upset about that. For Kansas State's perspective in the NCAA tournament, Dean Wade is the big factor because he's had ankle issues. He was out the entire way in the Big 12 tournament. While they have good guard play, that's the key for Kansas State. He's not healthy. I'm likely fading them in the round of 32.
All right, Eli, I would be remiss if I did not ask you about Ja Morant and Murray State. I think after Zion Williamson, he's probably the best player that's going to be in the NBA draft. I mean, the numbers that he's put up this season, and especially, I mean, he had a great Ohio Valley Conference tournament in the final. What do you have, 36 points, 7 boards, 3 dimes in that one. He played all 40 minutes in that game. This kid's an absolute stud, no question about that. But is he himself enough to maybe carry Murray State into a run in this tournament? Or what else do they have around him, I guess, is a better question.
No, he's not. And you're going to hear it all week that Murray State's going to be the number 12 seed that's going to make a run in the NCAA tournament. Or let's say they get an 11 seed out of the OVC because Belmont gets an at-large bid. And that kind of ticks up Murray State on the seeding lines. Murray State has no three-point shooting, or at least consistent three-point shooting. And I remember watching them in a game against Alabama non-conference play, And John Morant did everything he could in that one to will, to almost will Murray State to a win. But what held them back was three-point shooting. If teams are going to collapse on John Morant, you need to be able to space the floor. Murray State doesn't have that. They're sound defensively, but they're behind the arc. Their perimeter shooting offense is not as refined as some of these other mid-major teams. A Wofford can make a run because of that, because they have one of the better three-point shooting teams in college basketball. Lipscomb, if they get in, is an interesting team. UC Irvine can shoot the ball. They're really good, actually, on both ends of the floor. I like UC Irvine to get a first-round upset, depending on the matchup. But for right now, they're an intriguing mid-major team. Everyone's going to be on Murray State, though, because John Morant's going to be a top-three pick.
Sure.
I'm not on Murray State.
You just spoke about it a little bit. Your team, your favorite team, I think, in this tournament is Wofford. You love the Wofford Terriers for some reason. Why, Johnny Q Public's out there listening, why should I put Wofford on that second line? Why should I believe in what the Terriers do?
It depends on matchups, again, so I don't want to speak too far. Let's say they get matched up in the round of 32, if you do have them advancing past the round of 64, against a good three-point defense, because they do rely on a lot of their offense from beyond the arc. This is top 10 in effective field goal percentage, and that's a metric that relies on three-point shooting more so than the standard three-point shooting percentage, and along with field goal percentage overall. Fletcher McGee is one of the best players in college basketball. You could say mid-major, high-major, doesn't matter. That kid could shoot it from anywhere on the floor, has carried Wofford back into so many games because of his ability to space the floor. You think about guys like Steph Curry, who did it with Davidson making the Elite Eight run. Jimmer Fredette, who a lot of people in this town still have something against, after BYU made that run to the Sweet 16. That's a similar kind of player to a Fletcher McGee. They could space the floor along with McGee. A lot of three-point shooting. Cam Jackson is a really good big. Defensively, they're not the best. They're still top 100 in adjusted D, but you don't need elite defense to get you to the Final Four. You need elite defense to win within the Final Four. That's my perception of how the tournament goes in the last 10 years. Wofford has an elite offense. If you're hot from three and you're able to create mismatches because of your ability to space the floor, you have a bunch of ball handlers, you have a legit big in Jackson, Wofford has the tools to make at least a Sweet 16 run.
A few more minutes here with Eli Hershkovitz. He is our own college basketball Kemosabe, so to speak, at 6-7 to the score. I'm Kevin Zipak. That is Herb Lawrence. A texter here from the 224, Elias, checking in on the Houston Cougars. They are in progress right now, taking on Cincinnati in the final of the American Athletic Conference. Houston 31-2 this year. Texter basically wants to know, what are your thoughts on the Cougars?
The coach is a jerk.
I love
That's
Calvin
mine.
Sampson.
Sorry.
You can call a Calvin Sampson.
I'm a
all
Calvin Sampson guy as
there
well.
There we go.
Yeah.
Got cheated at Indiana.
Yeah.
It worked for a little bit with Eric Gordon.
Indiana. Yeah, I got you. He cheated.
He's the only college basketball coach that ever did any shady behavior.
What a jerk. Okay.
Bruce Pearl's having success, and he's cheated everywhere he's gone, including
sure.
the place he's still at.
Cheaters prosper, Herb. Where
too.
Have you been in this country for the past few years?
My team doesn't cheat. That's why I'm sad.
I love Houston, and I'm probably going to get killed for that on the text line and even tonight. During the Selection Sunday show, if they lose today against Cincinnati, I got them in terms of the betting process. And when I bring up a 125-1 future bet, that means if they win the title, obviously 125 to 1 odds to win the national championship. Going back a couple weeks ago, or a couple months ago, that's really good value for a team that's going to be on the 3 line, likely maybe moves up to the 2 if Michigan State or Michigan somehow, if the Wolverines, one of those two teams, move up to the 1 line, likely just Michigan State having that opportunity. Calvin Sampson has created one of the best programs, probably going to win the National Coach of the Year award come April. And you think about this team after losing Rob Gray, one of the best scorers in the country last year, could light it up from three. Corey Davis has taken on that role, not necessarily a 20 points per game score, but similar to how I talked to you guys about with Loyola, how you need or what you need to win in the tournament, you need elite ball handlers. Corey Davis, Armani Brooks even, who can handle the ball and shoot the three, Galen Robinson, Dejan Giroux, all ball handlers, all could shoot the ball. And also you have two really good bigs up front in Fabian White and another one, a senior up there too, for the Cougs. I love the way Houston plays defensively. The 13th rated adjusted defensive efficiency in college basketball. Breon Brady is the big I was thinking about. He's big for them defensively as a shot blocker. They have the top 20 shot blocking rate in the country. That spurts their transition offense. They do go in spurts where they struggle to score the ball, but they're going to pop up on your bracket. You're going to say, well, Houston lost to Michigan in the round of 32 last year, so I'm not going to take them that far. Houston lost on a Jordan Poole game-winning three. And you could talk about, is motivation going to carry a team through the tournament? This team is damn good. And yes, motivation carried you through the tournament after last year's exit on at the buzzer. They've talked about it all year. It's motivated them. Kelvin Sampson has a bunch of Oklahoma guards on that staff that he took to the Final Four, mind you. Not just Indiana, but Kelvin Sampson won at Oklahoma. I think Houston's going to at least the Final Four.
All right. So you have one of your Final Four teams. Give me the other three.
I like Duke, and I might, if we look at the matchups on tonight, I probably will fade them. But beyond the matchups, I love what Zion Williamson does for Duke is just changed their process offensively and defensively. Just a matchup nightmare. RJ Barrett starting to shoot the ball a little bit better because he has a little bit more space from beyond the arc, with Zion commanding so much attention inside, one of the better defensive point guards in the country. And Trey Jones can disrupt a really good Houston backcourt in terms of ball handling. So Duke is my other, my second Final Four team. The other two are, I'm going to go UNC as my third. Again, this is beyond the matchup, so I don't want anyone writing this down in pencil. Kevin, okay. I see you marking it down.
I have a pen, but it's okay. I have many different sheets of paper if I need to crumple this one up.
Kobe White. I mentioned him earlier, one of the better shooters in college basketball. That's a guy that could take over in the tournament.
That man, Shaquille Black.
Nice.
Really, really good score from the point guard position for UNC. And again, you need elite guard play to win in March Madness. Cam Johnson and Luke May kick great mismatches. Some of these guys, with the exception of Kobe White, were on that national championship team for UNC, going back to when they lost to Gonzaga a couple of years ago before Villanova just won it last year with Jalen Brunson and company. So UNC, beyond the matchups, I like to get to the Final Four as well. And then my last one is going to be Gonzaga. And I know they lost to St. Mary's earlier in this week. Really good guard play with Josh Perkins and Zach Norvell. You could say all you want. They lost to Tennessee in the non-conference play, and that was on a neutral floor. They lost at UNC, a team that I also like to make a run in the tournament. Josh Perkins can handle the pace like none other in the country. And Norvell could shoot it. Rui Hachimura is explosive around the rim. Brandon Clark spurts their transition offense because of his rim protection. And they also have Killian Tilly, who's back for the NCAA tournament. A lot of people are going to say, well, you lost to St. Mary's, but those are my Final Four.
All right, Chalk Eli right there, except for Houston.
Chalk Eli?
Yeah, number three.
Excuse me.
Chalk. Three Ouch. Number ones in that first? Ooh, wow. Eey.
Hey, man, chalk pays sometimes.
But that's what I'm saying. Is this a top – you're saying this is a top-heavy NCAA tournament where those teams are the clear favorites, right?
Of course, but you're going to hear a lot of bracketologists and NCAA tournament people say all the number ones and twos until we see the bracket, because one team that we talked about in the beginning was Auburn with Bruce Pearl, a really good coach, really good shooting. This was a top 10 team going into the season. So, and they ran through the SEC tournament like UConn did with Kemba Walker, a very similar team in terms of 3-point shooting. That's a sleeper to keep in mind as well.
Just before we let you go, we are almost out of time here. We haven't mentioned Kentucky, I don't think, at all. And for a Kentucky team, you know, they're always loaded. They've got Calipari, and of course he's bringing in these guys every single year, and they're all going to be rich a year from now. I feel like this year, though, as much as they can possibly fly under the radar, they kind of are there, even though they're still, I mean, they're a top 10 team in the country right now. Are they primed for a run, or are they not for real?
They were going to be my other one seed if I had five potential one seeds, which obviously is non-existent. I really like their guard play in Ashton Hagins, a freshman yesterday. You saw what he did against Tennessee. Through the first 37 minutes, Kentucky was going to win that game in advance to the SEC tournament title. Maybe Auburn doesn't win it if Kentucky gets there. And then the turnovers start to mount up. Tennessee starts making three-point shots. Grant Williams, a candidate for the Naismith Award, takes over. Ashton Hagins, though, is the key for that Wildcats team, because if he's able to control the pace, not turn the ball over, had an 11-2 assist-to-turnover ratio yesterday. I like that team. They have experience in the front court with Reed Travis, P.J. Washington, a legit lottery pick. And then you have three-point shooting with Tyler Hero and Keldon Johnson. So don't leave out Kentucky, because recency bias can play into my mind and other people's minds as well when you think about the tournament. And I don't want to leave Kentucky out just yet. I do like Gonzaga over them overall. But if you look at the regions and Kentucky is a more favorable draw and the Wildcats have the talent to do it, John Calipari has gotten it done with elite teams. Kentucky can easily not only make the Final Four, but win the title.
Eli, fantastic job. Like, how could you hear this and then not want to listen to the bracket show later on this evening? You sound so damn informed.
Yeah.
How do you fit everything in that noggin of yours?
I don't think
he doesn't watch the NBA. That's why.
Oh,
that's true. I don't think I've not watched an NCAA college basketball game. No days off this year. I've watched every single day. I'm pretty sure my girlfriend's going to kick me out at the end come April 8th when the Nets are cut down. But it's happening, and I cannot wait for March Madness to get started.
So what's your favorite day? Is it today, or is it Thursday, or is it the Saturday of Final Four? Which one's your favorite day of these three?
Every day is combined with Christmas, Hanukkah, and Kwanzaa. You got to love it all.
Say Kwanzaa? Yeah. You put an extra A in there? K-A-W? Never mind.
Sure. But it's
the
all,
fact that you knew Kwanzaa, I should just take that as a win.
It's all... Sure, okay. I'm not going to comment on that. It's all combined for me, but Thursday is my favorite day.
Thursday's the best.
Yeah. Thursday and Friday, man, I'm just so excited. And again, if you're thinking about filling out your bracket before the Selection Sunday show with myself and Jordan Stone from around 7:30 to 10 tonight, do not do it. We'll provide you all the information you need.
That is Eli Hershkovitz. You can follow him on Twitter at Eli Hershkovitz, and you can hear him tonight on the Scores Selection Sunday program around 7:30 this evening, along with Jordan Stone. Eli, thank you very much, man. Appreciate your time. And good God, you are just, you really know everything. I mean, I know it's like your thing, but you're absolutely insane.
You're crazy.
By the way, the first round of the tournament, like we said, tips off Thursday, March 21st, and the Score and Dos Equis have you covered. Join us for the madness at McGee's Tavern and Grill in Lincoln Park for a special broadcast with Bernstein and McKnight from 9 to 1, followed by McNeil and Parkins until 6. Listen to the guys live, watch the tournament, and enjoy Dos Equis specials all day. Phone number here is 312-644-6767. You can send us a text message, 67011. You can also tweet us. We like Twitter. You can tweet me at Kevbo _. You can tweet Herb at EchnerWall23. And Eli's still hanging around too, so give him a follow at Eli Hershkovitz. We're way late for a break here. Sorry, Studs. And we will get right back to your phone calls, your texts, your tweets, and everything. Want to get into a little Bears conversation at the top of the hour as well. Kevin Zipak, Herb Lawrence here until 4 o'clock this afternoon on 670 The Score.
Curiosity leads to large crowds in Mobile's Crichton community. Many of you bring binoculars, camcorders, even camera phones to take pictures.
To me, it looked like a leprechaun to me. All I gotta do is look up in the tree. Who else seen the leprechaun say yeah?
Ah, yes. Happy St. Patrick's Day to one and all this weekend. And yes, thank you very much, Adam Studzinski, for an absolute classic, the leprechaun from Mobile, Alabama. You know him. You love him. All you have to do is look up in the tree, and he's there. Kevin Zipak, Herb Lawrence here on the Score this afternoon until 4 o'clock, taking you up to a David Schuster experience, and then Shue will take you up to Bulls Kings. And then after Bulls Kings, you will hear more from the Score's college basketball guru, Eli Hershkovitz. If you missed this this last hour, we had Eli on for about a good 40 minutes previewing some of what you might see tonight in terms of Selection Sunday, in terms of who's going to be seeded where. He gave you his Final Four team. He gave you a few sleepers. I've got Wofford and Lipscomb and UC Irvine penciled down here in case, you know, you're hankering for an upset when you're filling out your bracket. I know you always are. So great information from Elias, as always. That was it was nice to have him in here. I think he did a good job.
Oh, man, he killed it. And I'm going to be listening to him at 7:30 to 10 tonight to fill out my brackets with Jordan Stone. It's a tradition unlike any other.
Friends?
Yes.
I've also got my fantasy baseball draft tonight, so I'm going to have to be like multitasking this evening. I'm going to be spinning plates. I'm going to be drafting my fantasy team. I'm going to be keeping an eye on the brackets. I'm going to have Eli on. I'm going to be keeping up with a lot of the comings and goings. But at the top of the hour, Herb, and we talked about this a little bit off the air, and I want to bring it to the airwaves, as they say. I want to talk a little bit about the Bears.
Yes.
Because this is Chicago, my friend. It's always Bears season in Chicago, no matter if it's March or February or whatever. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the moves that they've made this offseason so far, some of the moves they haven't made so far this offseason, and really where they are in terms of, you know, a bona fide Super Bowl contender. And if they have enough pieces in place here to really be considered a Super Bowl contender, and I don't want to quite have a referendum on the quarterback, and I don't want to say that he's trash or yep. he's always going to stink or he stunk last year. I'm not saying any of that. I just think we need to have a nuanced conversation about Mitchell Trubisky, because very, very rarely, very rarely in general in this country, in this day and age, does anybody have a nuanced, intelligent conversation. And with the quarterback, it's always a polarizing figure. You've got these two factions. You've got the Mitch team, and you've got the team that say Mitch is absolute trash. And I'm somewhere in the middle of that, and I want to know how you feel about it, and I want to get into it a little bit more at the top of the hour. And, of course, I want to know what you listeners and Bears fans have to say about it as well. So give us a call here, 312-644-6767. Send us a text message, 670-11. And, of course, shoot us a tweet if you're into that as well. You can follow me at Kevbo _. You can follow Herb at Ecknerwall23. Bears talk at the top of the hour coming right up. Kevin Zipak, Herb Lawrence here until 4 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Give me the goal. I want the goal.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.